Welcome to Lack of Focus, an X-Wing miniatures game podcast brought to you by Dice 8 Productions. Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to another episode of Lack of Focus, episode 28, Point Predictions Per Guaranteed to Go Wrong. I am your host, Ed Horn, and alongside me tonight, my only co-host, one Mr. Chris Sheriff. Chris, how's it going, my friend?
Oh, good, thanks, Ed.
So we are down two men, of course. Chad's still in his recovery, and now we're down Sean, too. So it's just going to be the two of us. And, of course, we're trying to do this on emergency record so that we can get everyone in and so that Chris doesn't have to stay up until midnight editing and get this out on time for you. So tonight, short episode, but it's mostly going to be covering our points predictions. We, of course, have yet to see points for the stuff that came out in the latest wave, and we don't know where the points are going yet. But we have some ideas, and that's going to be the main topic. We got a little bit of stuff for the flight deck. Chris has got some fun travel advice for us, and of course, we've got listener questions, and all of that is going to be coming up right now because we're not going to break. We're just going to roll right into the flight deck. So, Chris, what have you been flying lately, my friend?
Nothing at all. I posted last Friday, so two Fridays ago now. Does anyone fancy a game? Because I normally stay after work, but it was the Edmonton Hyperspace Trial that Saturday, and I couldn't go because Joe was working, so I had to watch Evie. So I couldn't get any games in. I tried to get some midweek, and no one took me up on the offer. I posted before my trip to BC, and it turned out the game store that ran X-Wing there had closed down. So I've had no X-Wing at all.
That stinks.
It's sad. I feel bad. I'm like, I suppose it's good. I'm hankering for a game, so there's always that.
Well, we did try. Unfortunately, we've had scheduling issues the whole last 2 weeks. We tried to do some off content because you made a trip to British Columbia for family reasons, and we tried to do a scheduling of at least a game on Vassal, which didn't pan out. We tried to record on a regular night, and I had thunderstorms that knocked out power at my house, so I couldn't record. So it's just been a jumble of a calamity of mess going on. So I've got a weird scenario. I've played more X-Wing than you have in
You've
the last 2 weeks.
You've played more X-Wing than everybody else on the cast.
Ho, ho, ho.
All of us combined.
Soak all that in for a moment. So, brief history in case you've missed it in previous episodes. I've been struggling a little bit with second edition, trying to find a list that kind of works well for me. Now, oddly enough, as I've been preparing for tonight's episode, one of the things, whenever right out of the gate, as soon as second edition first came out, I'm like, I want to fly twice TIE Swarm. It was the list that I first started playing back in first edition, wanted to kind of go back to my roots and continue to play it. And it just never gelled for me. Don't know why. I know how to fly TIE Swarm, but it just didn't gel it. And it was probably because the game was so new to me, but I remember working with Chris on lists in the early days and Chris saying, you know, six TIE Fighters is probably the way to go. And I'm like, ah, what does Chris know? Turns out that's actually not a bad list and is still doing well, even as we are on the precipice of Wave 4, still doing well. So I may have to revisit that. But I've tried multiple different lists during the course of the last, how long has second edition been out now?
September, so not 10 even months a year. Now.
Yeah, 10 months. So over the last 10 months, and of course, I'm not getting nearly as many games as I usually would get in, different iterations of different lists, and I have, you know, tried Aces, I've tried Vader builds, I kind of jumped the ship and went Rebel a couple of weeks back and started trying that Fat Han list, which was fun for a couple of weeks, and I'm like, it's not my style. And then I landed on a list that I probably should have started with, which is probably a good starting point if you are a new player to the game coming in, which is basically a Rebel Beef list.
Yeah.
What I said to Chris was my criteria was simply this. I need a list that I can point at someone, shoot at them, and I can actually take damage back and not die right away. Because that's really my play style. My play style, really 10 swords, getting in your face, shooting you with lots of red dice, and blowing stuff up. So inadvertently, I've kind of come around and meandered around to this list of short list is real quick. I'm running Wedge with Swarm Tactics and, of course, the S-Foil upgrade. Biggs, naked. Braylon, naked. And I know that everyone else is running Cassian Andor with Leia in the list. I don't own a U-Wing. Never got around to buying one. So in replacement for it, I went ahead and put Jake in, and Jake's got Outmaneuver.
Yeah.
The list performed really well. Of course, I went over to Chad's House of Pain, and where I usually lose pretty badly. This was probably one of the fastest games I've played against Chad in a really long time. For all intents and purposes, I literally just set up in the middle of the board, He tosses. And if you ever see him play in person, or if you've ever played him in person, he has no tactics or strategy to where he tosses rocks. He'll literally stand about a foot off the table and just kind of toss them onto the board. It's hysterical. And it actually comes in to benefit him on more occasions than it doesn't. But I sat them up in the middle of the table. He finished up on the one corner. He banked in. I took out his, what is the name? What is the one that he's using? Darn it, I can't think of it off the top of my
Vermeil
head.
Vermeil or Sabak?
Yeah, Vermeil. He was running Vermeil, he was running Pure Sabak, and he was running Natsuntir Turfanir.
Yeah.
So I took Vermeil literally in one round of shooting. So Vermeil banks into me, and I, okay, admittedly, I may have cheated just a bit. And before going to the game, I'm like, so how do I even run this list? And Chris is like, well, just slow roll until you know where they are and then just shoot stuff. Okay, so that's what I did. I just slow rolled into the list, and I took Vermeil out in one round of shooting. Oh, I forgot. Wedge had swarm tactics on him as well.
Yeah.
So I would find ways of being, okay, so which ship is going to be the one? And he really wanted to focus down on Biggs, so Biggs would always be shooting first because he was the first one to die.
Yeah.
So short story on that one, I ended up taking out Major Vermeil in the opening round of shooting. The second round of shooting, he ended up taking down Biggs, but not before Biggs got to shoot and really lay the wood down into Pure Sabak. And then from there, it was just picking off. As he swung into the meat of my list, I had Jake coming up from behind, and then Jake was basically just following Turfanir the whole way around the board until he got him off the board. Yeah. And that was it. I mean, I think there may have been 8 turns total, and the last 4 were mostly mop up for the list. So it performed really well. Now, I'm not going to judge a list or my playstyle based on one game with a list. However, I can attest to the fact that it was super easy to play. I had to explain to him I'm going to do Braylon's focus into a barrel roll to give myself a stress, even though I'm intentionally barrel rolling to a position I know I can't complete the barrel roll. Well, why do you want to do that? Because I want him stressed. That's the whole point. He's sitting right beside Biggs. He's always going to try to barrel roll right. He's going to fail, but he's still going to take the stress.
Yep.
And it worked out beautifully. It really did. It's almost
like cheating. It's good.
It's almost like cheating. It's almost a point-and-click list. Now, I think there are probably lists that could have gotten behind it relatively quickly, but even at that, like the
That's why people run it with the U-Wing and Leia. Because if you have Leia, it doesn't, like, oh, get in. I spent 3 turns taking pot shots and then outmaneuvering you. Oh, what? You just did white care turns? Cool.
Or in the case of the B-Wing, the white.
Talon rolls.
So cool. So cool. So again, overall, I've only gotten one game in. I'm going to try to get more games in with Chris this week on Vassal for content for the show. So you guys can kind of see a game try go for that. I mean, see, not that I'm trying to knock Chad. I'm not. I'm really not. But I mean, Chad basically only ever plays against me anymore. I only ever play against him unless I get the opportunity to play against Chris online. So I need some other input on that to see how it's going. So overall, super happy with the list. And I think I might be a step ahead because I got a distinct feeling that the Cassian Andor Leia combo might not be around much longer. Spoiler alert for maybe one of my guesses for points adjustments.
Did you remember with Biggs as well that he's only removed at the end of the initiative step at which he dies?
Yes.
So if the entirety of Chad's list was shooting at initiative 4 and Biggs dies to the first shot, he can continue pulling damage and overkill himself.
Yes. Good. And it absolutely came into play. In all honesty, I think aside from Biggs, Biggs is the only ship that died. I think I may have lost one shield off of Braylon.
Yeah.
That was it. Really. Yeah. He did have Jake dead to rights at a range 1 shot, and he only landed 2 paint. And I rolled all evades.
Yeah.
And that was it. So, I mean, again, it was really fast game. I think if he had to play it again, he may play it differently, knowing what the list does now. But
it's like you beat him the first time around with the Falcon list as well, and then he gave you a shoo-in. So,
yep, exactly. So my anticipation is that tomorrow, if I go to play him tomorrow night, he's going to kick my teeth in. So that would be my guess. So that's the game I got played in. Again, I'm going to try to get a game in with Vassal on Chris, so for more content for the show. And then if I do get over to Chad's house this week, I will have more games. I need to get more games in. I'm committed to the idea. Like, I think that's part of the problem is not having that good list to enjoy. And then the X-Wing scene, for whatever reason, at our game store has kind of broken up. Everyone went different directions, which is I don't know what to do about that, because every time I go up there on that night, they're playing other miniatures games. The guys that kind of come in, and the community leaders there, have got a lot of Warhammer going. They've got a lot of 40K going, which I'm not opposed to, but there's also not enough X-Wing players to try to get a game and just ad hoc.
Yeah. It gets harder. You've got to have that, like, get a WhatsApp chat going or a Facebook group conversation going and have anyone fancy a game tonight. And once people start seeing it being played in the store again, it'll ramp up again slowly.
Yeah, that's going to be the catch, is trying to just show up again more often. Again, yeah. With my crazy schedule, the way things have been going lately, it was getting on that regular schedule to be able to be in there every Tuesday night I was, and that kind of, it does kind of hurt the old schedule.
It's hard being our age and trying to be community leaders and do all of that. It's tiring, man.
It was easier 5 years ago, easily. Yeah. To be able to just get to the store every Tuesday night, and you're the lead. You're the one making sure that the game's going to be played. You're running the leagues. You're making sure that everyone's getting interest in the game. You're there to invite those new players into the game to see it played. When you're not there, and the guys that take over, no offense to anyone that's doing it, are more focused on other games are where the focus goes.
Yeah. And it's hard. I know I've got to learn Transformers this week, so I'm running an event on Saturday. It's good.
Should be fun.
Be my version of Magic the Gathering for you. We can talk Transformers decks. I've got to sort out a lot of used
keyboard decks. Is it a CCG or is it an LCG?
It's like a CCG.
Ooh.
So, it's weird. I can't tell you about it because I literally haven't opened the pack yet, so I've got to do this instead of learning that game. But Thursday this week, I'm going to try and play a game with Jill just to get myself through it and learn how to play Transformers. So we'll be good.
You have to let me know what that's like.
Yeah, it seems interesting.
I love a CCG. It's going to be dead in 2 years, but why not waste money on cardboard crack?
Well, obviously, it's Transformers. Well, the characters are double-sided. So you can play as a car or as Bumblebee.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I'm
there
looking
forward to it.
There has
to be advantages for being in car mode, though. Like, otherwise, why would you do it?
I have no idea. So the set that's out at the moment is the Constructicons, or the Combiners. So you have Devastator and the
Wait, this
Autobot
isn't new.
Version.
This has been out for a while?
No, so this is set 3 is coming out. So they're on set 2 at the moment. It released last year. I think it was at Gen Con last year they were giving away stuff.
Yeah, completely under my radar.
Yeah, it's Wizards of the Coast are doing it. So
it's a Wizards game.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, we'll be able to talk more on it next time because I'll have played it and opened a pack. But
looked at what the cards are. So it should be interesting. Wizards is known for doing some particularly good games. One that I'm happen to be aware of. Two, actually, because they did buy the
D&D.
They did buy
well.
Dungeons & Dragons. Oh, that's something else I should probably bring up real briefly because this wouldn't be a lack of focus if we didn't go off site or off topic. I actually scheduled an opportunity to play Curse of Strahd. Yeah, so he had to cancel, unfortunately. He had a birthday party that he forgot, but I am going to be doing it this upcoming weekend. Yeah. I'm super excited to get down to play some D&D again, so it should be fun. I have the kids there. We had talked about doing, you know, I proposed that Chris maybe run it for us, but it became really difficult with all the kids and the microphones and how we were going to do it. The idea of just sitting down at the game store sounded a lot easier.
Yeah.
We still have those the early rules for the Alien RPG, and I still want to do that. I still run around an event for that. Have you had the opportunity to read that yet?
I have not. No.
Okay. So
I've downloaded a PDF now, so I'm a step closer.
That's good.
I'm not quite there.
That's good. I've read through the rules. It's pretty interesting. It reminds me a lot of the D6 Star Wars from West End Games. Yeah. But it is very role playing heavy. So the rules are very kind of light, just like the Star Wars CCG or the Star Wars RPG was in those days.
All right. Well, you know, if you're getting into more D&D stuff, you might want to check out a new D&D podcast.
I've seen that.
That's Initiative. You know, you could check out episode 1 of that and learn what makes a good session and from a player perspective or a DM perspective. And nice short hour-long-ish episodes. And it's good.
Yeah, that sounds good. I was thinking of doing like a side thing on my YouTube channel for my Curse of Strahd run because I've never played Ravenloft. Ravenloft is one of those things that I've owned and never had the opportunity to run, because we've always run homebrew campaigns, but you always pick pieces out of it that you can kind of steal a piece here and steal a piece there. Yeah. So I genuinely don't know what I'm getting into. I know some pieces to it. I know the main bad guy. I know the feel of the gothic horror of what Curse of Strahd's going to be. But beyond that, I don't know what I'm walking into. So the only thing I know is that it's an open sandbox kind of campaign and Strahd's the bad guy.
Yep.
That's about it. So I'm hoping to have like a genuine reaction to a classic Dungeons and Dragons campaign setting that I've never played in.
Do you know what character class you're going to play?
Oh boy. So, okay. So Chad is going to be playing the gnome wizard, which should be fun. My oldest son is going to be playing the half orc fighter, the beat stick. My youngest son is going to be playing a dwarven fighter, so he can go and beat things up with his brother. My oldest daughter is going to be playing an elven ranger, and I am going to be playing either a human or tiefling cleric. I liked the idea of role playing a tiefling cleric in a gothic horror setting. I did not do it for character advantage in any way, shape, or form, but I just thought the idea of playing a tiefling cleric in a gothic horror setting would be really cool.
So humans are OP in D&D. Barring the dark vision thing, humans are the best race.
No, I understand. Yeah, and I agree with that.
Anyway. But I'm playing a war cleric at the moment, and they're stupid good at low level. So
well, yes. So if you went Domain of War, I think I'm going to get stuck going Domain of Life and playing the goalie.
Oh, you're going to have to.
Because of how many of my kids are playing and two of them are, I'm going to get in front of everyone and punch them everything in the face. Okay, you're going to fall down a lot.
Yeah.
So I'm willing to play that role of the goalie.
The life kind domain, of, yeah.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
All right. It's okay.
You can still do Domain of Life and not be have other things to do other than heal.
So you get heavy armor mastery, I think.
Correct.
In Life Domain. Anyway, so you can take the chainmail and a shield and be armor AC 18 off the bat.
Yeah, and, exactly. Like you can be a bit of a beat stick. I mean, you don't get all of the bonuses, but you're not defenseless either.
Yeah. Go human and take the feat, the one where you only get 2 stat increases in a feat. If you can do the alternate setting, because then you can take, I took heavy armor, not mastery, the one that gives you an extra point in strength, I think it is. I can't remember now. But basically,
I'll look it up.
Yeah, it knocks 3 off the base damages from slashing, bludgeoning, and piercing damage. So even if they hit you, they do less damage unless it's magical, so...
So you are just basically a heal tank at that point.
Yeah.
All right. So that was Lack of Focus Dungeons and Dragons Corner. Woo!
Yeah, good.
All right. So let's move on to the news. We do have an official article that came out from FSG covering over the Resistance transport.
But we'd already spoke about it after the stream and everything. So
yeah,
fun.
I mean, we've seen it. Obviously, the boys in Australia got it weeks ago. There are some rumors that folks at Barnes & Noble weren't given the memo about not selling it just yet. So us here in the U.S., there may be people that have access to it now and have things. But technically, they are not legal and not official just yet. So, I mean, beyond the stuff that we've already – we're not telling you anything you don't already know at this juncture.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there was an article about it.
Go and check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only thing we don't know are points, which is going to be part of our main topic.
Yeah. Should we just do main topic? I don't know. I don't really have anything else. I was going to whinge about traveling, but
I'm still waiting for that.
Oh, yeah. So where to start? So I went, my granddad was over. I think he was here last time we recorded from the UK. We were going to drop him off in British Columbia so my mum can drive him to Vancouver, because she said to book his flight back from Vancouver. So it's a 7.5-hour drive.
Does he live in Vancouver?
No, he lives in the UK.
So why is he going to Vancouver, which is on the west coast of
Canada?
There's
a direct flight from Vancouver to Manchester. There is not a direct flight from Calgary to Manchester.
You'd almost be faster to go to Toronto, though, wouldn't you?
If you didn't have a 5-hour wait at the airport.
Yeah. Okay. I've been to Vancouver's airport. It's beautiful. I've been to Vancouver. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful area. It really is.
Yeah, well, I think she's going to take him down to Seattle first and then drive up. She wanted to go to the US as well. So I had to sort out his visa and everything for him.
Yeah.
Fun times, but he's 83.
Yeah, so. Vancouver to Seattle is like 3 hours.
Yeah, well, they've got like he leaves on the 4th of July.
Oh, so okay.
They've got time. It's
oh yeah, no, they got okay. In that case, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, they're
when we
make
were in Vancouver, that was my biggest disappointment. Is I wanted to go down and see Seattle, and they're like, "Oh, it's a 3-hour drive, and the kids don't want to go." What? Yeah. Damn it. Yeah.
But yes, we left. Jill was working, so we couldn't leave like Thursday morning. We got home from work. We left at like 4:30. Got to Revelstoke and decided to stop there because it was 9 o'clock and Evie was just done. Wasn't sleeping, but was done. Had to unload.
Nothing more nerve-wracking than a screaming baby on a car ride. It definitely tries your patience early.
So my mum was here last week. And she went back, and she's got, like, a Mini Cooper van. So, obviously, didn't offer to take any stuff back. So we had me, my granddad, Jill, Evie, the two dogs, travel crib, all my grandfather's luggage, an air bed, because my mum doesn't have a bed for us, our luggage, food for dogs, snacks for Evie, and we've got Jeep Patriot, so we borrowed a roof bag and put that on.
Yeah, so we bought one of those. We have to.
Yeah, we got to the hotel after obviously unpack the roof bag because the travel cot's in there. So did all of that. So by the time we're upstairs, it's like 10:30, trying to get some food. My granddad's going to take all of his medication, do all of that. I'm just done. Super stressed out. And
yep.
Then Evie is like well past her bedtime. She's overtired and just wailing. All four of us in one room. So and then in the morning, so our breakfast included. So I went to breakfast and it's just garbage. All right. Oh, here, so
have
when
a
you
bowl
say
of cereal.
Yeah. So well, do you have like sausages and bacon or anything? So. No, we were going to. So don't. I don't want your life story. I don't want to know why you don't have the stuff I want. Just tell me you don't have it.
So and leave it at that.
Yeah. So I put some bread in the toaster. Because if you put toast in the toaster, you just burn it. and then that takes like 20 minutes to make this bloody bread go into toast. And then
they
I'm
had
gonna,
one from like the 1960s.
But it's all okay at this point. And so we drive through from Revelstoke. It's about a 30-minute drive to a ferry. We don't have too long to wait. And then like, it's beautiful. Get a ferry across the lake.
Can I pause you for 1 second?
Yeah.
When we were in the UK and we were in Scotland and we were Ireland, the people that did B&Bs there, man, they fed you well for breakfast.
Yeah, but you got sausage and beans and stuff there, didn't you?
Every morning. Yeah, every morning. It was great. Yeah. They know how to eat there. Let's just not so much in the haggis. I tried it, didn't dig it. I but beyond that, yeah, no, they fed you well there.
Oh, haggis is another tangent we can go on. I'll get you some good haggis recipes that you'll actually like. Because you don't just eat haggis on its own if you don't know if you'll like it or not.
Well, no, so like they did haggis and eggs, I thought I was going to dig. Like scrambled eggs and haggis, I thought that would work. No,
first,
I was
the
wrong.
First time you eat haggis, you need to eat Balmoral chicken, which is chicken breast, which you fillet. You stuff it with the haggis inside it. You wrap it with some really strong, like a mature cheddar or something like that, and then wrap it in bacon. And then you do a nice whiskey cream sauce with some really finely sliced onions.
All right, dude, you're making me hungry.
And that, some mashed potatoes, and then you're good, man. Then you'll love haggis. It'd be amazing.
All right. I obviously went to the wrong places in the UK. I should have asked you where to have haggis.
So just come around to my house. I'll cook for you. It's okay.
I might have to do that. Wait, we're gonna be doing the lack of focus. You can cook breakfast in the morning. Yeah,
well, I can't. When I did the hyperspace trial in Saskatoon, I got breakfast sausages and bacon and beans and bread and did a big cooked breakfast for everyone before we had the knockout round and then drove home.
So. Hell yeah! Anyway, so you're on your way back to Vancouver.
Yeah, no, to Caslow. So my mum lives like 4 or 5 hours from Vancouver, still in the Kootenays, where all the lakes are, and like the Okanagan Valley and all of that kind of area. still mentioning not quite the plains of Western Western BC. And but I've still not been to my mum's new house yet. We only moved in like early in January this year.
You still haven't been to your mum's house yet?
She'd not sent me the address. So like, we got there and she'd sent an email with directions. So I was like, okay. So we went to Caslo, stopped and had some lunch, took the dogs for a walk, and then looked at these directions. And it was, when you leave Caslo, you see the shutty bench sign, then there's a there's a garage on your left.
Oh god.
Then keep driving until you see some abandoned cars on the right. Then about 2 kilometers after that, you'll see a blue sign.
Not then, what it says. Just
then after that, there'll be an upturned tree stump.
Oh my god.
Turn left after and the driveway is left after an upturned tree stump. If you see another sign, you've gone too far.
Oh my god. Okay,
so you think that roll it back. When you leave Caslo, there's more than one road out of Caslo.
Right. Oh my god.
So
you had an adventure.
So I took it. She'd give me the address. So I typed the address into the postcode into a sat nav, and it gave me a direction. So I followed it, and I'm like, oh, it's a garage. Not seeing the sign for shutty bench. No abandoned cars. Maybe we're going the wrong way. So I zoomed. I'm like, this postcode covers like three separate parts because it's around the lake.
Oh,
so,
God.
So I'm like, okay, so I can't use a postcode. Okay, she said you'll see the sign for Shutty Bench. Maybe I'll try looking for Shutty Bench then. So I put that in, and I've gone completely the wrong way. So we've got to turn around again, come back into Caslo.
Oh, my
leave,
God.
Take a different road out of Caslo. So we get there, and then my mum's like, oh, why are you so late? don't you even. Don't you? So then, like, it's not. They've bought this really nice, old, like, it's a 100-year-old, like, log built home.
And
loads of like land on the hillside, and there's a separate cabin where we're going to be staying. And we go up there, and it's like, we knew we need to bring a bed, so we brought the air bed, but there's no furniture. So I'm like, okay, so I can't just sit down for a minute. Fine, okay, there's a floor, I suppose. So we set everything up, and she's literally that morning had put curtains up, but then there's skylights which don't have curtains on. So the curtains are shut because Evie needs a nap and it's still light.
Like, damn it!
And just... Oh.
Can I birdcage her and just put a blanket over?
So, yeah, we came home and I'm happy now. It's all fine.
But, we've all had those bad trips. You get them past you. Oh god, that's awful though.
Oh, I can't even. I'm ex-military. Give me directions. Give me a bearing and a velocity, and I'll turn off at the right point. It's fine. Give me coordinates on a map. Give me landmarks that are actually things that are concrete, like. Don't not turn left at the woodpecker. Like, you'll see some birds flying. Turn right. What are you talking about? These are directions.
These are the directions you give in a joke, not a real. These are not real directions.
I don't know. I was pretty annoyed, shall we say.
I can imagine.
Yeah. Fun. It's good.
Yeah. All right, so back on topic.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, so
traveling tips with Chris. Give him the man directions.
Yeah.
Well, it's weird too because we did a lot of traveling in, like, we've been to Canada quite a bit. We've been to Quebec. We've been to Toronto. We've been to the only place we haven't been to is Calgary. Obviously, we've been to Vancouver. Your Jeep like program. It's not just like in the U.S. I program here's 118. You know, Fish Lane in this city in this zip code, and it takes me there. Yeah. 99% of the time. In Canada, that's a little different because you can go by the postal code, but that gets you in the general vicinity of where you're going.
Yeah, depending on the type of area that postal code you use. So if you use a postal code in Calgary, it'll get you to like the city block type thing. So you'll be fine, like the general area. But then you'll have, generally, if you're in a city, you're going to have the intersection. Right. So like you'd have in the US, I suppose, if you were in one of the big cities in the US, you'd use like 73rd and 8th. I don't know if that's a thing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And that's how you do, like, tell me those kind of things and I will go where I need to go. But I don't know. The worst thing about Calgary, and it's probably the same, but in the US, but you have Center Street. And then you have First Street West and First Street East.
Yep.
So you can't have like First and Fourth, and First and Fourth could be like two separate locations.
Yep.
Like, why? Just be a real place.
Yep. Oh. Yeah. That's one of the things. There was a big mass movement post 9/11 to have every location in the U.S. has an address. Like, my parents used to have a rural route. Like, you're just on a road somewhere in that vicinity. All of that changed so that every place has an address. So, like I said, 99% of the time, I put an address into my phone, it takes me right to the door.
Yeah. So the best one for me, I believe that the postcode I have for the house is now actually an incorrect postcode, because I believe a postcode is tied to the mailboxes. So you don't have mail delivered to your house generally if it's like letters. They go into a mailbox, you have the key, and you go and open up the mailbox.
So yeah, we have PO boxes like that here in the US too. We still have those?
Yeah. So on the side of the street, so my street, my postbox has got like 26 boxes in it. And then further down the street, there's another one with another 26 boxes in it.
Oh, that's it.
So I believe
it seems like if you order stuff from like Amazon, how does that
they
work?
They just drop that at the door and it sits on the doorstep.
Okay, so that still works the same. Yeah, no, so everything in the US, I have a box outside my driveway. It's got one number on it. That's it.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I'm done. I don't know.
All right, Chris has vented about his travel
Canada's
frustrations.
Defeated me. It's fine. Okay, X-Wing. Let's talk X-Wing. We've done magic, Transformers, D&D,
yeah, travel
tips.
Let's actually talk some X-Wing.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Okay.
All right, so we're going to talk points?
Yeah, so I thought, since it's just the three of us, to stop one of us from talking, just the two of us, we've got three things to talk about. So we're going to keep the same kind of format as last time. We're going to do three ships each, or three cards each. And then the three new ships. But because Ed and Sean and Chad aren't here, we'll just do your three, my three, and the N1, the Hyena, and the Rebel Resistance Transport. That'll give us nine different things to talk about.
Okay, so sounds good.
If we start off with Resistance Transport, then you do one, I do one, and we'll just rotate around.
Sure. All right, so let's start off with the old Rebel Transport, where we feel this is going to go. Now, we're talking the transport itself, so I'm
I think the transport, I don't know if it's a generic for a transport pod, so I was going to say...
Logistics Division Pilot.
No, that's the Resistance Transport, the actual pod.
Oh, that's the transport itself.
I don't think there's a...
Then there is not, no. They are all named pilots from what I can tell, so... Kovanel, Norden Shrivdry. Yeah, that guy.
So I think if we go for points for the Logistics Division Pilot, because I think that will be the cheapest Resistance Transport.
I'm betting that's going to be one of the cheapest ships in the game.
So let's go. Where am I?
Because it really doesn't have a lot. We're looking at initiative one, two attack dice, one evade. I don't know. Maybe that can't be right. I'm looking at yet another squad builder. It has it at five hull and three shields.
Yeah. So it's like a Y-wing.
For the little pod.
This is the transport. Okay, so we're not doing the pod. We're doing
Not doing the pod. Okay, so yes, I would agree. So what are we looking at for a B-Wing cost? B-Wing cost, the low end on a B-Wing is, just to double check. Come on, wrong ship. So long and generic Blue Squadron pilots are at 41 points. They have one less attack die. That's a start. They also have one higher point in initiative, and their action bar is much better. Not to mention the fact that their dial is atrocious. Yeah. They do have the backwards movement. They do always end up giving an added bonus for that, and they do have a stall on that one. So I'm going to
coordinate and jam as well.
Correct. So that is something to be said. So I am going to throw out a number of 32 points.
Okay. So
So that is my guess. Those are going to come in at 32. I think the loss of the attack die alone is going to drop it quite significantly.
So I'm going to take a different route, but I might end up somewhere similar to you. So I'm going to look at within faction stuff rather than trying to compare it to a B-Wing.
Oh, that's a fair argument.
I'm going to try and look at like the cheapest stuff we've got. So a Blue Squadron recruit is 32 points for the A-Wing. So that's the cheapest ship we can currently take. I feel like you take a Blue Squadron recruit naked. I don't think you're going to take the logistics division without anything. Even if you just throw an attack officer on there or something like that.
Right. No, I would agree with that.
Because, I mean, if you're looking at just jousting, and you're probably pretty even. I'm going to give myself a point just so we're not the same. I'm going to say 31 points. I'm going to say that it's going to be cheap. The pod will obviously come in as the cheapest ship in the faction.
Oh, God, yeah.
Because it has to. But I'm gonna go 31 points for the resistance transport.
Okay, I can agree. Yeah. I can agree with that. We've got our points marked. We're doing the up one, down one. We'll come up with a winner at the end.
Yeah.
All right. So next one.
So do you want to go next for one of your cards?
Now, this is.
I'll give you my prediction first this time.
Now, are these upgrade cards specific to Wave 4?
No, just so this one can be one you think will change from.
Oh God! All right, well then it's going to be super simple. I'm going to take the not even low hanging fruit already in the basket. Sitting.
I've already
on
typed
in
Leia.
Oh yeah. So in preparation for the show, I went over to List Fortress and looked at like the last four hyperspace events. The number of lists that consist of Braylon, Cassian Andor with Leia, Wedge, and something. Sometimes it's going to be big. Sometimes it's going to be, I've seen one that had another, like 10 num, like another B-Wing. It's some other ship, if that combination. That is all over the place. So I've seen that it has won hyperspace events recently, and I see that as a predominant thing. What we can tell from the previous points upgrade is when you see a list that appears quite a bit competitively, they are going to adjust it. And the easiest way to adjust that is to adjust Leia's points. Currently, she's at what?
2 points, I believe.
Yeah, 2 points. She's ridiculous for 2 points. So I could see that getting bumped up high. I'd say even to the 8-point range.
So you think... So I was going to go first for this one.
Oh,
so
I'm sorry.
So I wasn't copying off you. So, because I would have said, so feel free, I'll not type that in. I'll go with my reasoning for my thing first. Mm-hmm. I was going to say 6 points because I believe she started at 8 and then they brought her to 2. So it'll go up to 6. And then she'll probably come back. So I think the correct points for Leia is between the 3 and 5 range. So like you're talking 4. But I don't know. I know how error correction works because it used to be part of my job. You're better off going lesser extremes and bringing it in, because Leia doesn't have to be perfectly costed this time. Everything just has to be better costed off this change than it was on the previous iteration.
Well, there's other things I think they take into account too. So when looking at Leia, like what they want to do, like, so if you look at that list comes in at like what, 190 points somewhere in that neck of the woods.
Yeah.
They'd want to put it to the point where they're not getting the advantage of either A, the advantage for I'm 8 points lower than your point, so I get the initiative bid, or point her to a point where taking those two ships means that one of those other ships or one of those other upgrades has to pop off.
Yeah. I think the issue with this kind of thinking would be that if you like Braylon on his own is okay, Cassian on his own is okay,
Leia
on its own is okay. So like the entire list has to go up slightly. Right, you can't just say Leia costs 20 more points because then you might as well just remove Leia from the game. Like there's the supernatural change is very close to an example of
very
doing that.
Similar to doing that. Yeah,
I feel like Kylo is still usable with supernatural.
I feel like
you could use Anakin with supernatural.
I think even some of the generic Jedi are even usable with supernatural. Yeah. I would think,
but you're very close to just pointing the card out of existence at that level.
Okay,
So I haven't typed in 8, but if you want to change it, it's up to you.
I'll take it down to 7. How's that sound? You've got 6. I've got 7. Maybe I'm a bit high on that
So when she's 9 now, you can mock me.
Yeah. So that's the low-hanging fruit for the upgrade on that one.
Well, see, I have another relatively low-hanging one. I'm going to go with Duke.
Ooh.
Because
that addresses so many things.
You could talk about Quad Phantoms, but if you do Quad Phantoms now, and then the N1 comes out, and you can just spam Duke on that, does that not just become a new Quad Phantom list?
I would agree with that.
So I'm going to say Duke probably needs addressing. And how many is it? 3 points at the moment? I'm going to have to check.
I was just looking that up as we were talking. Duke is currently at 5.
Duke is 5 points. Okay. So if I were to... where would I want Duke? I'm so bad at this. So I would say 7 points. Does that stop Quad Phantoms from having more than 2 Dukes? It must do.
Let's take a look. Let's find out. So if we went, I love doing it live.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to copy. So right now they are running.
So you'd run.
Why am I not seeing?
So that's
interesting.
So you, at the minute, you can do Quad Phantoms with Sigma Squadron Aces. You can get 3 of them with Duke at 199 points. If you take it to 7 points, it would be you could only get 2 Dukes in there. You couldn't fit the third, and I would hope that would be enough, but given what I said earlier about them doing big changes, it could go higher. But like I said, I'm typing in 7 for me. But
I think I'm going to go in the same vein. I don't know that it's going to go that big, because I think even if you bumped it up by one point.
Yeah, so if you go to 6, you can't fit 3 of them.
Exactly.
But if you drop one of them down to an Imdar,
you could still get you could still get 3. But then you lose the Crackshot one though. It's interesting to bring that one, because Crackshot's on my list of potential bumps.
So yeah. Let's stick. Right, so I think you can come at it from the other angle of if we ignore Quad Phantom spamming Duke, how would you look at it of like if you were just taking Whisper? I think being able to take Duke on Whisper should be a valid choice.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
So would you still pay 7 points? Put it on Whisper. So Whisper with only Duke would be 61 points.
Yeah.
Compared to 59 at the moment.
It's 2 points difference. I think I'd still do that.
So, do you think it needs to go up more? Am I talking you into a higher change?
No. I think I'm gonna stand firm on a 7 for the moment. I could see it. The concerns that I have is you again the same argument that we had with Leia. If you go up any higher than that, you're gonna point it out of the game, to the point where no one's gonna run it.
Yeah. So we're both a firm 7 points on that one.
I think we'll stay in a tie on that one.
Okay. So next, should we do the N1 next, or do you want to do Hyena?
Oh, let's do the N1. That should be fun.
Okay, so we don't have a current cost for the N1, but we have other ships to compare it to. I think we spoke about this briefly when we actually talked about the article on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to do we want to do the cheapest one, or do we want to pick a pilot and do the pilot?
I think we should go with the cheapest one, which is what, the Bravo? Oh, no, it's the Handmaiden.
I don't think we can. Is it the Handmaiden?
It's not.
So are we doing the cheapest one, or are we doing the Handmaiden?
We're going to do the cheapest one, because I think
if the Handmaiden's the cheapest one, this ship is fucking broken.
Yes, agreed. And I as soon as the words came out of my mouth, I went, no, wait. I roll immediately regret back. Saying them. So yeah, let's go with the Bravo Flight Officer at initiative 2. So we're looking at 2 attack dice, 2 evade, 3 hull, 2 shields, a whole host of actions with a focus, target lock, barrel roll. Oh, this is basically an A-wing.
Yeah.
It's trading one hull for one evade. And what did we say that the... again, I don't want to compare it to other A-wings, because it's not a fair comparison inside faction.
So yeah, I mean, if we look at the Torrent, it's got the same amount of health as a Torrent, I believe.
Good comparison.
Yeah. It's got the same agility as a Torrent. It's got a better dial. It's got full throttle. So
it does.
It starts to get interesting, shall we say? So it's got shields. It's got two shields instead of hull. So it's got a better defense naturally. It's got full throttle, a better dial, better actions. And apart from it, it's missing the evade, but it gets one for free if you go speed 3 or higher. And a torrent is 25 points.
Correct.
For the cheapest. So
I'm going to let you speak first, because I spoke out of turn on the last one. So I'm going to let you talk.
So, if I want a torrent to be a viable choice, I think this has to cost in the 32 to 34 point mark. So I'm going to say 33 for the base.
My top end was going to be 32. I was going to go 30 to 32. Because you got to figure that puts it 7 points higher than the torrent.
Yeah. I'm 8 points higher than the torrent at the cheapest.
Yeah. So if I go at 32, it's 7 points more.
Yeah.
And you're paying for those 7 points. I'm on board. I'll take a 32. I'll take a 32 for the old knob. Although what does that put at? You could run how many generics? 6?
Do it. It's 200 divided by 32. It's easy. Yep, 6 with points to spur.
Yeah, I want to see that. Because I could see this being their... I could see a Naboo Starfighter Swarm. Whether or not you do the Leia or the Padme Handmaiden build, or just... I mean, even at 32 points, it's a great just... I've got 30 extra points floating around. I'm going to toss a Naboo Starfighter in kind of thing.
You kind of make me want to say even higher, because... Do you want to have 6 generics that can focus evade and just fly at you?
I do, actually. I really do. I want to see lots of it.
That was probably a loaded question, because it isn't a defender. It doesn't have the 3 agility. It doesn't have what feels like infinite number of hit points of a defender at times. It's 2 agility. The evade doesn't add an evade like it used to. So I feel like we're in a good ballpark there.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah. We'll put a pin on those.
Yeah, so what's your next card?
My next card that I want to see, well, that I feel that I could see. Can I pick a ship instead of a card?
Yeah, it can be. It's a ship card, a pilot card.
Okay, so you already talked about one of my favorite ships in the game. They have points adjusted the Delta Squadron TIE Fighter, TIE Defender down to 70 points, and I still don't see Defenders anywhere in the game.
So there's an interesting thought I have on this would be, is that a Defender problem or a Phantom problem?
Okay, so that is a fair argument.
Because you can only play a Defender in Extended. If you're playing Extended and playing Empire and want generic ships, are you going to run the Phantom because that's blatantly busted because of what we spoke about with Duke and all of that stuff?
Okay, fair
argument. I mean, I'm not trying to talk you out of massive points cuts. Let's take it down all the way so I can run three. It's all right.
I promise...
Three Defenders is okay, FFG. I won't abuse it. It's okay.
Yeah, well, and I still don't think that it's... I don't think it's a top tier list, even if you do. If you would be able to point them... And you, in order to do it, you would have to point them down to, what, 65 points? No, they'd have to go lower than that.
63, I think.
63 points.
Let's...
And those are generics. Those aren't taking, like, you know, Countess Ryad... Oh, like, you're not 65. Taking the names ones. You're not taking the old triple defenders of yore where you had like a Ryad. Who am I thinking of? Why is my brain freezing on my old defender pilots? Rex or Brath. Like, you'd run like either Brath or Viscery. You'd do Viscery and then you do Viscery, Countess Ryad, and then either a Delta or some other, like even at that, like, that's 240 points right now.
Yeah. So. Do you want me to go first, or do you want to go first?
I've already typed my number in anyway. Because you know me, the Defender is my favorite ship in the game. So, my favorite ship in Star Wars lore, period. I want to see them back in the game.
As much as I want to run three of them, FFG should not let me. So I concur. I think it could get cheaper for the Delta. So I've put 67 points in.
Because
3 at 67 is 201. So you cannot run three of them at 67 points. If you go to 66, you can. So I feel like 67 is the cheapest floor that you can have. If they go cheaper than that, I win. And I will run three defenders.
You're just gonna run three deltas at initiative three
win. I'm done. Yep. I'm playing three defenders again. If FFG ever lets me put three defenders on the table, I feel like they've made a mistake, but I will have 6 months worth of glorious fun playing them.
Maybe it's just me wanting the chaos. I'd love to see it drop below that. So let's say that I'm going to agree with you to a point. I'd like to see him go down to 66.
So you want three to be not necessarily viable, but you want it to be doable.
It to be doable. I mean, obviously, if you take any of the named ones, you're out of the ballpark. You can't run more than that. And while I agree that the ship and the dial are pretty good, even with you, I just don't see
seven three health behind focus evade and three agility.
I know, but they already have lists that do something very similar. They just don't have the attack dice. So the only advantage that it has is that white K turn. And don't get me wrong, it's a huge advantage. So, I genuinely believe that.
Let me. You're locked in. It's fine. I'm not changing it now.
At 66. I'm comfortable with it.
Like, can you imagine probably not gonna change it at all. If you could run? Probably not. But we spoke about Leia being broken because she lets you, for a relatively cheap price, just correct your repositional mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you outmaneuvered me. I'll just turn around. It's fine. White K's let you do that. So you get really high time on target. You've got seven health behind three agility with focus evade.
I'm not disagreeing. It's a good ship. If they were that good, then you'd see them more often.
Okay, Ed. But we'll do when we play this week, I'll run three defenders. And you can...
Three naked deltas.
Yeah, and we'll see.
Okay, we'll play test it. I think it's a great idea. We will see how it goes. All right, sounds good. So, yeah, I would like to see an era where you could actually see run three of them. I'm disagreeing that they're, I mean, if they were that good, they'd be running now.
I think the only thing that keeps them out of the game at the moment is the fact that torrents are stupid good. No, not torrents.
Phantoms,
yeah. I said torrents because I'm going to pick torrents for my next card.
My curiosity is, and I wonder how many players are still kind of, like, because I think there are plenty of people that are playing extended. So, like, they, like, those guys didn't get rid of their Tide Defenders. They're still there. They're still out there. I have four or five Phantoms. I don't even, or Defenders. I don't even know how many I own. So, like, they're out there. I think, you're right. There are just better options for those ships. And I think the idea is, if I remember correctly, the way that Alex Davian, the guy, says it, when they were looking at points adjustments for the first time, I was like, well, what's not currently being flown? And why? This is a ship I never see on any of the lists anywhere. Yeah. So even from a marketing perspective, if they want to sell Defenders, or they're not even in hyperspace legal any at this point. So maybe I can't even use that as an excuse. I'm sticking to my guns. 66 points. Yeah. Go Defenders.
So I'm going to do something slightly different for this one. I want to talk about V19s, but we're going to talk about Oddball. I want to do the torrents.
Specifically.
But we're going, so we're going to, not, it doesn't have to be Oddball, but we're going the top end now. He's the most expensive torrent.
Yep.
Because I think this is criminal. So
you think it's criminal that he's, what, 38 points?
Yeah. So I'm going to go, so Oddball in the torrent is 38 points. But two agility, two attack, five hull, no shields. And his ability is, after you fully execute a red maneuver or perform a red action, if there is an enemy ship in your bullseye arc, you can acquire a lock on them. So, yep. This ability is effectively blank. Because you have to do a red move. So you have to dial in the red move before those ships have moved, knowing that they're going to be there, because you've done a red move, so you can't reposition. So if you trigger Oddball's ability once a game, you're probably doing well.
You're a really good X-Wing player if you can get that to par.
And it, so it's 38 points. Do you know who else is 38 points?
Hmm.
And this may touch on the next card I pick. But shall we talk about Lulo at 38 points?
Sure.
So, same initiative, same attack die. Agility 3 instead of agility 2. It's only got 4 health, but 2 of them are shields. So you get 2 lots of protection for a direct hit to make it the same. You have an infinitely better dial in that you have what I think is the best dial in the game.
Agreed. No argument.
You get an extra action because you get boost on top of focus, evade, target lock, barrel roll. You get refined gyro stabilizers. So, because you've got an arc that can turn around. And you actually get an ability that's probably one of the best in the game. For the same
points. Same.
Good job we don't balance outside of faction. You just make everything viable within the faction. But the problem with that argument is Oddball's not even viable in his own faction.
Yeah.
Because it's 55 points in an arc 170. 55 points. Anakin Skywalker is 60.
Yeah. In the same faction.
Yeah. Okay. We'll be nicer. Because Anakin, you're never going to take a naked Anakin. But you might take a naked Oddball at 38 points. For 1 point more, you can take a naked Jedi Knight.
Yeah.
Get lost. There's no way that is anywhere near correct.
So are you thinking just Oddball himself? Or you're
so
thinking,
I think
like,
so
the,
everything
the
needs
entire
to get,
chassis.
But I feel like the Gold Squadron is probably okay at 25 points. I don't feel like it needs to go down to 24. But everything after that, like you jump from 25, you jump to 29.
Yeah.
For the Initiative 3.
You do unlock the talent slot though.
Yeah, but you're unlocking a talent slot. But now I'm having to. If I want Crackshot, it's not a 1 point card anymore. It's a 5 point card.
Yeah. But, unless they bump it.
So, the reason this is obviously a problem with Dedicated. It has to be, because that's the faction specific card, and it the only faction I've seen with that big of a jump to get an EPT is this faction. So if the power is in Dedicated, make Dedicated cost more.
Yeah, and then lower the cost of these.
Yeah. So I feel like make it 1 point more to go from initiative one to initiative two to initiative three with an EBT.
Yeah.
So that's a 3 point decrease. Then pile some points onto Dedicated if you want to, but then tier that all the way up. So it goes like 26, 27, 28, 29, 30. So I may oddball 32 points. I still wouldn't play him, but I'd feel like it was my choice not to play him.
Yeah, at 32 points, it's kind of hard to argue at that juncture. Yeah, no, I would agree with that.
Yeah. So, okay. So there we go. There's my case for why oddball needs to change. What points would you go for? I think I'm going to put in... I'm going to be... Because if they do change him, I still want to win points, not where I think he should be. I'm going to go 34. That's a 4 point drop.
I think I'm going to come in at 35. Okay. That is going to put him right below kickback by a point, assuming that they don't adjust the entire chassis.
Yeah, well, I think they'd have to, but I don't want to talk about... I don't want to get into that differential thing with...
Right, because they've done that before where they've adjusted the entire chassis and left one pilot alone because they were happy with the points where they are. Because we're not... It's not the days of X-Wing old where your low ones, it's an increment that way. You can have lower initiative pilots that are higher points because their ability is just that much better.
Yeah. So we've specifically said for the N1, it's the cheapest N1. Whichever one the cheapest is, doesn't matter, but we're talking about the cheapest. For a defender, we're obviously talking about the Delta. For this one specifically, want to hit oddball.
Yeah, specifically on that one.
Yeah. Okay, so that was that one. So we've got the Hyena left.
Ooh, let's go into that.
So would you like to do just again the cheapest Hyena, or do you want to do that interesting one that has a coordinate and stuff?
Ooh, tempting to do both. Let's go with the cheapest for starters, the baseline chassis.
Okay, so we have...
I so want this to be cheap, but it's not going to be. Just because of the number of access, like coming out of the gate, the access to the torpedoes and the missiles and the bombs or devices. Oh.
So I think... The way I would look at this would be comparing TIE fighters to TIE bombers.
That's exactly where I was going. You read my mind.
Yeah, so if we look at TIE fighters and TIE bombers.
So like, scimitars are at 30 points.
Yeah, and that's 6 points more than a generic TIE fighter. Is the generic 23?
23.
So, yeah, 7 points more. So 25, that would put them at 25 points if they have the same differential.
Which one are you talking specifically, the Bactoid? Because they are limited to two, and there is something to kind of be said about that.
That's true. So, well, again, we want to go what the cheapest one is. So not necessarily.
So that would be the Techno Union. Yeah, that'd be the Techno Union.
We would assume that we're the cheapest.
Well, at initiative one, and it's generic and no limit on it, we would assume it's the cheapest.
So I think 25 is probably, using that TIE fighter equation, I'm putting 25 in because, you can run 8 of them, but you're not going to because that gives you no points for upgrades. And if you're going to take one with no upgrades, you're probably taking vultures.
Yeah, like offline, you're doing it wrong if you're doing it that
offline way. TIE fighters at that point.
Yeah. So you said 24, right?
25, I've got.
25, because 24 puts it at TIE fighter cost, and it's so beefy with the hull. I got to say 26.
So
You've made a good case, I'm not going to lie.
Where are we? I've lost the article now. So how much hold is it? Have they got six holds? Is it five? Yeah, five.
They have five. Well, the Techno Union has five. They didn't. Yeah, as I said, the Techno Union has five, but only two evade dice and only two attack.
Yeah. So it's one less hull than the Titan. So if you put a hull upgrade on it, that would be a 4-point upgrade, I think, its current agility.
Hull upgrade's five, my man.
Because
that is adjustable. That is variable based on your
agility. So correct. It is. Yeah, so it's five. So yeah, that would put it at 30 points. It would put it at the same points as a TIE bomber. If I cost it at 25. So I'm happy with my guess. I'm comfortable there.
I'm trying to balance that with the fact of how this faction's built out, though. Like, it's designed for dirt cheap throwaway droids. This is not a dirt cheap throwaway droid, because you're not just going to spend 26 points on this. You're going to spend 26 points on it, and you're going to toss a couple of torpedo, a couple of missiles, a couple of devices. You're going to toss other things on that.
Yeah.
Every time you do that, you're taking away from your Vulture droid. So I want that to be like, you're only going to run one of these as opposed to like the fleet of them.
Yeah. Okay. So are you happy at 26 then?
I'm happy at 26. It's going to be 30 points, you watch. Dead in the water as soon as it comes out.
Please no. Okay, so that is the last of the new. So we've both got one card left each. I think that should leave us that. You had Leia and the Defender. Yeah, mm-hmm. So you've got one more card to pick.
Crackshot. I think we... First of all, I love the Crackshot was at 1 point. I think what we are finding that it's super utility... It is one of the ones, hey, I've got a couple of points. I'm just going to throw it on this ship and throw it on this ship here, which is great. I think the trick with that is, especially when you start getting into things like, I don't know, TIE swarms with crack shots. I think it was appropriately costed at 1 point in 1.0. If we take that points out, it's really a half a point.
So I'm going to put 2 points in for you. I'm going to cut you off at the pass and just type in two.
Yep, I'm going for two.
So I disagree with your reasoning here, mainly because I've ran Crackshot a lot in a lot of my lists, because I agree that it's a really easy upgrade to throw in. The number of times my ship dies having not spent it, and that's not because I've not lined up a bullseye, it's because they rolled all blanks, or if I spend it they rolled all evade, so it's irrelevant anyway. And maybe it's a bit of a thing where I like the upgrade and I don't want them to change it, but
I might have something to do with it.
Yeah, I'm going to leave it in at 1 point. So
you're saying no change, change.
Yeah.
Oh, wave that one off.
Yep.
All right. So did I cover everything?
One more for me. Let's see. Where do I want to go? I did two ships, didn't I? No, I did Juke. So I'll find another ship. What a about if we did what faction have we missed? We've not done anything Scum, have we?
I was just gonna say, I don't think we've touched on Scum, and we don't think we really touched on Empire either, but to be perfectly honest with you, well, I think Empire
the Defender
is...
you've put the Defender.
Oh, that's fair. Okay, yeah. Good argument.
Okay, what about, okay, this might be interesting. If we look at the Benari pirate,
As soon as you got, I was like, "Yep, I can see. I've seen a lot of those too."
So, the mining guild sentry and Benari pirate are the exact same points.
Yeah, so, they need to differentiate between the two of those.
I don't know if I'm happy with that as a thing, because I feel like it's okay, might not change. We'll go with it anyway. I think it not changing is fine, and it can, like, there's no way Sean and Chad are gonna guess these anyway. So like, they might just put random numbers in and not curse. This can be our chance to throw them off. But I'm gonna leave it at 24, because I feel like if something were to go up, I'd rather see a couple of the mining guild ties go more expensive, because I do feel like the mining guild ties are better than the Z95s, but I think the Z95 is the correct choice. Is the correct points.
So are you?
If that
you're
makes
picking,
sense.
You're picking. Yeah, you're picking the ship to stay.
I'm picking the ship, but I think we'll stay the same cost against the one that I think will change.
The
so
mining
that Sean that and Chad lose.
I see how you go. It's stacking the deck there.
Yeah.
All right, I can agree with that.
I think that if you do a direct comparison between the Z95s and Mining Guild TIE fighters, I feel like the Mining Guild TIEs give you more advantages. The dial is better, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
They have the ability to fly over asteroids and interact with asteroids, which you can have agency in bringing three of the asteroids. So you can then ignore them. I think those abilities make them a better platform for the loss of two shields, but gaining one hull. So you lose one hit point overall, but you gain an extra agility die. So you will have the variance games where you will survive through a lot more shots that would kill a Z95. Whereas in there might be for every game where a TIE fighter just dies to one shot, you'll get two where it lives where it shouldn't, in my opinion.
I could see that. I also could see the fact that these things are the almost equivalent to an Academy TIE.
Yeah.
So I could see them dropping a point.
See, I feel like I've tricked you into going 23.
You may have got me, because I'm going to go for it. If we're going to talk about the Z95, I'd like to see it dropped out, because it makes sense to me. And in my head, it makes sense that this is the equivalent of an Academy TIE for all intents and purposes. It does help differentiate that between the Mining Guild TIE. Like, why would I take one over the other? That one's a point cheaper.
No, yeah. I think I agree with the reasoning, but it should be 24 points of Mining Guild. The cheapest Mining Guild should be 25.
So I agree.
That's my argument. So maybe I've suckered Ed in as well. We'll see. Oh, feel free to play along at home. obviously, by the time you listen to this, points should already be out anyway, because points are coming out tomorrow as we record.
Oh.
They're doing a live stream at lunchtime tomorrow, so if you can tune into that. If you've listened to this on your commute in the morning, because I managed to somehow get it edited in time.
Because Chris is amazing.
Go and watch that live stream if you can on your lunch hour. See what the points are. And then next time we record, we'll do our scoring. We're going to do the same thing again for this. Every dollar we make for our Patreon for this episode, we're going to donate to a charity of the winner's choice. So,
all right, sounds good. Last time I went to JDRF, I won the last time. On a technicality.
We've avoided that technicality this time, so you can't screw me out of my win. And we'll see how it goes. But yeah, that's been fun, I think.
I love doing these.
Yep, gives us 9 ships, and we'll see if we can get Chad and Sean's points on them via text. And I'll upload that spreadsheet to our Facebook page once we've got it all worked out and see who wins.
Sounds good. Do you want to move on to listener questions before we walk out the door? Because unfortunately, I need to get up at the butt crack of dawn tomorrow to be in work early for a meeting, so... We'll move on to listener questions, because I know you put something up on Facebook, and of course, I never look.
Yeah, I did this actually like at a reasonable time this morning, and apparently if you give people a reasonable amount of time to ask questions, they actually do.
Look at that.
So, we had one from Jerry, which was more of a request for an in-focus episode, where we talked to Paul LaRue and Jean-Luc LaRue about the face off in the finals of the Edmonton Hyperspace stuff like that. So I'll speak to Paul and see if they're available, Jerry, and we'll see what we can do. Then we had Peter, who's one of our patrons as well. Moving forward with the idea of new obstacles, do you guys have any ideas of things you think might be cool, like ion clouds? If you fly through them, you lose your action and gain an ion token. Like movable obstacles, stuff like that. Anything to add extra level to the turn zero of the game? So, what do you think? Now that we've added in the gas clouds, obviously they added in debris with wave 7 of first edition.
Yeah, first edition.
Yeah. So can you think of any ideas for another one you'd like to see that you'd think would be interesting? And so, generally the idea of new asteroids, I suppose.
One of the things that I think would be interesting, I like how he let it, the Ioncloud sounds like a really cool idea. I'm going to make sure that he's aware that, you know, if you touch it or you fly through it, you pick up the ion token. I think that'd be super pain in the ass to fly against on the board. I think that that would give too much of an advantage, though. But anyway, so neither here nor there. What, one of the things I've always thought was weird about the game of X-Wing is the fact that the asteroids never move.
Yeah.
So, like, a wobbly asteroid in some way, like, either it rotated or it moved or something along those lines, that you could find a way. And you'd probably have to put guides in the damn thing and say it can go one here, like, yeah, that kind of thing. But I always like the idea of the Empire Strikes Back flying through the asteroid field kind of thing. I'm going to go and follow that line of thought a little bit further. And I always love the idea of the asteroid worm, whatever the hell the damn thing, the worm. Imagine how cool it would be if you could somehow, some way, put something on a rock that you don't know where it is and where that thing lived. And you had to flip the rock over. Oh, you landed on the rock and the asteroid ate you. I think so, that would be just a fun campaign one. I don't think it'd be competitive. I think the more competitive one would be the idea of rocks that move.
Something that I think would be pretty cool would be the rocks becoming an official part of your list and then assigning points costs to the asteroids.
Ooh.
So then you could do stuff like have an asteroid with a rock worm that damages stuff within range one of it, and you throw that on your opponent's side and it costs 10 points or whatever.
Oh, that would be, that's a really cool idea. Or you could go into things like a small station or something like that. Yeah. That maybe it rolls a single attack die here and there within X amount of range. Yeah, no, I like the idea of that a lot.
Like doing stuff like, you can build in synergies. So like grappling struts could be free, but if you take asteroids, they could cost a point. So you're having to buy obstacles to activate your grappling strut. Or like we've all seen the like X-Wing on easy mode with the gas clouds and how they really benefit aces, that you can hide behind them. You can bug out through them at the time you need to with certain ships. Like if you think that that's beneficial to one list over another, then why don't you make that list pay points to take it? So
yeah, that is interesting.
That would be pretty cool.
I always thought that it was interesting. Like whenever they introduced debris fields, that's whenever like that first idea, like really the seed for that start. Like there are certain ships in the game that this benefits over others. Why do they get to take that as a free choice? That's actually a really good point. You could even go like one step further than that. And like I said, I'm going to pay 15 points to have a station, but I've got a ship docked to it. And moving on to turn from turn two on, I can release that dock ship into the field. Like that would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of things I think in that play space of obstacles in the game that they haven't done a lot of movement with. And I think they're trying to be really, really careful on what they add to the game. But I do like the idea of assigning point cards. Like rocks can be free.
Yeah.
But a debris cloud costs one, a gas cloud costs two, and you actually have to pay those points for that. I could totally see that.
Yeah. So then we have Chris Hunt. I'm sure you've been asked what changes in points you'd want to see, but what would be your biggest disappointment of something you think needs looking at if it isn't? So his example would be if Leia's points didn't change, that would be his biggest disappointment.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Obviously, we've done the main segment was on points changes, but biggest disappointment would be Leia for you,
I think that.
So
my biggest disappointment, if Leia stayed where it is, I don't think she's entirely game breaking. I could almost be okay with it. My biggest one would be if they decided to increase the chassis on like the TIE fighter, for example. So like TIE fighters have fought so hard to get to where they are to kind of stay relevant in the meta. If they decided, oh, TIE fighters are good now, we're going to bump up all the points, that would be disappointing to me. That would be a supremely disappointing.
That's kind of the opposite. That's something they change that you don't think so. Something you think needs changing. I'm holding him to your question.
You are. All right, I'll let you talk.
You're not politicking your way out of it.
Yeah, let me put some thought into that. That's a good question.
So I have to be honest and say probably the Phantom platform, because even though I chose to hit Duke when we talked about the points changes, I feel like the underlying problem is the raw efficiency of the Phantom platform. It's a better joyster than the X-Wing is. As just across the board, like the X-Wing gets one extra hit, but the Phantom generates a free evade every round. So after the first round of shooting, that extra hit should be negated by the evade. And then every turn after that, that the Phantom lives, it has an extra health above and beyond that. And that's without including anything like Duke in the list. So I think I'm pretty sure when we had the thing with Chad really early on in the show, when we're talking about the Phantom, and I said about how good Phantoms are, that they are the best generic in the game by far. They joust better than anything else because of their stat line and action efficiency. And I would be most disappointed if that platform didn't see a slight increase. I don't think you can put all of the weight of the power of the Quad Phantom list on the platform. I think Duke as an upgrade has to bear some of the brunt of that. But I do think that if they don't touch a platform and just hit Duke, that would be the most disappointing thing for me.
I don't think you could have said it any better.
Yeah, I think it would show a lack of understanding of how to actually balance a game, which that is what would disappoint me, rather than the Phantom not actually changing. Because I can live with that. It's only 6 months. Maybe we'll get it next time. Doesn't really matter. Maybe another ship will come out and change it. But right now, I feel like understanding how Duke and the Phantom chassis both interact, you can't put everything on one or the other. So that if they don't change the Phantom platform, that would be most disappointing.
I think we can hang on that.
Yeah. Do you have a different one, or are you going to tie
your... So here's the problem I have with answering that question. I don't think I've played enough competitive X-Wing to be able to answer that question appropriately. I could probably formulate an answer to say, oh, I'd be disappointed if this and that. I'm not having those kinds of problems, so I don't genuinely know what I would be disappointed if this didn't change. Leia is probably a great example. I think that one probably should change. Maybe if they look at the interaction between how inertial dampeners and... after the ruling of saying, yep, if you take Kane and inertial dampeners, that works, and then not addressing that after, either inertial dampeners not going up or Kanan not going up, that would probably be a disappointment. But I don't also feel that that list is super oppressive to the meta at the moment.
I think that's a hard one, because for that specific example, there's a lot of points left in that list.
Yeah.
So, like, to make it not work points-wise, I don't think that's a problem you fix with points. I think that's an upgrade slot thing or a FAQ that does not work anymore thing. But that's a slight tangent, because why would we keep in focus?
It's called lack of focus.
Yeah. Who is the most underrated pilot, in your opinion, that people should try? I've got a solid answer for this one, and I feel like you'd back me up if I said it. I think Biggs is still horribly abusive and people should play him more.
Oh my God, yes. Oh my God, yeah, absolutely. Because it was one of those things, even whenever playing the game in the chat, he's like, oh, well, that's just so much worse than it is. I'm like, yeah, but it's that key one that you're able to pull off. Oh, no, Wedge doesn't take that crit. Biggs takes it and Biggs got shields.
Yeah.
Does nothing.
It's like, because now people used to have to shoot Biggs, so they'd just kill him. And then he'd be dead because we had to shoot him. Now we don't have to. So it's only one hit. It's only one hit, man. Just shoot someone else. It's okay.
Yeah.
So it'll be all fine. Just yeah. You target Braylon. It's all right. I mean, Braylon's good in the end game. You probably want to deal with him. Oh, Biggs will hold that crit. What's that? You want to shoot at Wedge? All right. Well, you got hit crit. Okay. Biggs will take the hit, Braylon will take the crit on the shields, and Wedge's still undamaged. Do you still want to shoot Wedge again? Or do you now want to shoot something else that you didn't target lock because you were going to put all your shots into Wedge?
I think Biggs gets worse if you had the points to be able to get some of the shield regeneration, like R2-D2 on it, like then it would be like super oppressive.
So I hate to say this because, again, I'm running it in two of my squads. I'm running regen. but R2 Astromech probably needs to go up a little bit. I mean,
yeah, like even the generic one on Biggs, I mean, how many points is that? That's only
4, I think. 4 points for an R2.
I've got the points. I could run that in my list now.
Yeah, so I wouldn't put it on Biggs. I'd put it on, I would put it on Wedge, because then, so I would, if you can, I would run Selfless on Braylon, leave Biggs naked, and regen on Wedge. Because then, when they shoot Wedge, okay, you got 3 hits. Braylon will hold a crit, Biggs will hold a hit, and Wedge will take one. Hope he doesn't regen that.
Yep.
And it just forces Wedge through into the end game. But there you go. So, Rebel Beef, as boring as it is even worse if you put Biggs in there. So, when they nerf, when they make Cassian more expensive and Braylon more expensive.
Yep.
Biggs, you heard it here first, folks.
I'm already
Selfless set. And Biggs.
I'm already set. I'm already running it, and I've got enough points that, depending on how much they go, I can still survive. That's why I was sort of not disappointed that I didn't own the Ewing, because I didn't want to get used to the list for something that I know that I genuinely believe they're going to bump Leia up enough to the point that it's not going to be playable.
Yeah. Okay, so next we have John Wilder. What is the most unnecessarily complicated rules interaction in X-Wing 2.0?
Ooh.
I find this one really difficult, actually, because I've spent, obviously, a lot of time working with the rules, because I've done the rules question group on Facebook I started, and helping out with the community rules judging and running all the events that I run. I think that if you dump everything from 1.0 and treat this X-Wing as a new game, that it's actually really clean. I suppose the end phase could do with tidying up the interactions with when ships die at the end of their initiative step needs fixing, because if you run over a rock and die, do I have to wait until all of the other ships move? Is it initiative step in activation or only in the engagement phase? So, but those aren't really interactions as much as just rules that could do with being extrapolated on a little bit more. I don't know.
Anything that deals with like the negating, Like you said, A, the stuff that comes at the negating the dice at the end step before the neutralized dice step. You're right. I happen to agree that I feel like they did a really clean job with defining when and where things happen and what phases they happen in. I haven't had any of those weird interactions where you're like, well, how exactly does this work now that happened? The only one that I can think of was the Kanan Inertial Dampers one, which they FAQ'd. They cleared that one up.
I suppose anything that required the FAQ that effectively says it works because we said so. It does have a second part of his question of what do you hope to see in Epic?
Oh boy. Okay. And
remember, you've got a hard stop, and we do have more questions. So.
Okay, I'll try to get this out as briefly as possible. I want to see Epic playable competitively. If we want to see the one thing that I want to see come out of Epic more than anything else, Epic was, and again, I don't know where to draw back to my roots on this one. Epic was Warhammer 40K Apocalypse, never meant or designed to be competitive in any way, shape, or form. They never paid much, if any, attention to it as far as FAQ-wise, price support-wise, anything. It was just kind of there, like, hey, look, you've got this cool CR90. Go have fun with it, because I don't think they ever adjusted anything or FAQ'd anything that came out of that period. None of the hard points, nothing. Nothing ever got touched. It was almost an afterthought to X-Wing, period. It's your vehicle to get your C-3PO. Here's your vehicle to get Palpatine. Beyond that, that's it. You never got to see them. I want to see those ships in play. And in order to do that, you need to take the game seriously. And if you take the game seriously and you take Epic to be a competitive game, just like they're pointing out Standard X-Wing at 200 points, if they did a 400 or even 500 point Epic Games and treated it like its own game, treated it competitively, That's the thing I want to see the most. If the CR90 is underpointed and not getting enough play in the epic competitive realm, drop the points. If the hard points are too or not working well, drop the points there. Add the points there. Ooh, that one combination of this crew here. Do all of the same things that you are currently doing with the great game of X-Wing now with that. Don't just let them collect dust on a shelf. Let people play with their toys. And the only way to do that is to make people want to play with their toys.
Okay. Mine's a very more concise answer than that. I want to see squadron cards.
Ooh, that would be cool too.
I want to be able to field Black Squadron. Like if you take Vader and 3 Black Squadron ties, you get this benefit. Or if you take Wedge and some Red Squadron pilots, you get this benefit. So do a squadron card. I don't know. Be cool.
Like Rogue, like you can have a Rogue Squadron card. Yeah, I can.
Yeah, you can do a Red Squadron, do a Rogue. So if you take, like even have, if you do, okay, this is like, no, you've said Rogue Squadron, but you could do, if you field Wedge, Luke, and a Red Squadron pilot, the Red Squadron becomes Wes Janson.
Ooh, there you
and
go.
So the Wes's ability is written onto the Squadron card, and you get the Red Squadron pilot just does that thing.
Sort of similar to how they fly in Armada, almost. Like you don't buy one X-Wing, you buy 3, and they come in this with this particular configuration. Yeah, yeah. I can see that all of them in the group get this one benefit. Totally could see that.
Yeah, seems cool. Okay, Harrison Sharp. I'm hearing that points will be out tomorrow.
Yep. Yep.
But not official for tournament play until a later date. If that is the case, is this a welcome or unwelcome change? Would you like to see the 11-day grace period for premier events extended to new points as well? Or keep this points change as a one-off? So I'd have to come at this from, because it's me, so I'd have to come at it from a logical point of, the points are coming out tomorrow because they probably said they'd do the live stream with the points and we've scheduled all of that in. The ships are obviously being held for a different reason. There must be some reason why we don't have them yet, because like Barnes & Noble have them and have sold them. They're in Australia being sold. So they're not, I'm going to double check live as we speak, just so I can make sure I'm not lying to you all.
Mm-hmm.
If I go to the upcoming page, it still is not showing as shipping now. But it's still showing as at the printer last time I checked, which was like,
that's how much bullshit that is, though, if we know the suppliers already have them, by the way.
So wave 4 is still listed as at the printer. So there's obviously something wrong somewhere, whether it's a tariff thing from them coming through a port, or I've heard stories from people saying, oh, the quality control wasn't good enough on some of them. They had to send them back. I mean, if that's the case, we're really screwed. That it's going to be a really limited release.
I hope they don't do, what was it, what was the wave that wave 2 that they did that with in the early days, whenever X-Wing got really big really fast? There just wasn't, like, you could buy core sets and that was about it. Like you couldn't find a Y-Wing. You could find the Falcon, you could find the Fire Spray, and you could find the core set, and then any of the other individuals, it was impossible to find them anywhere.
And so I don't feel like anything needs to change from the norm, but I don't think this situation is the norm. So I don't know that it's an unwelcome change or a welcome one. I think it's just the situation we're in. I don't like blame anyone for it. I mean, I was joking on the FFG Twitter or Facebook page. I was like, oh, can you let us know when we'll be able to buy them from someone that isn't Barnes & Noble? Oh, but on second thought, just keep them until July. I spent all my money on Keyforge this month. So, like, you know, whatever, it doesn't really matter to me. As long as, like, we'll get them. I would rather a points change happen on time, because that affects the greater game of X-Wing.
Yes, agreed.
I believe that you wouldn't want to put them into effect until people have Wave 4, because there will obviously, well, I say obviously, but maybe it's not obvious, but you'd expect that there will be interactions which are pointed around the new ships.
Yeah, so once they get released to the wild, you kind of need to adjust for that. Yeah, no, I agree with that.
Yeah, so for example, if if Duke does go up to 7 points, but it only but the Phantom platform also goes up, so the Duke change wasn't needed, people might complain. But then it might actually be that that Duke change was needed because the N1 with Duke spam is really good. But you don't see that until you have the N1 in your hand as well. So,
yeah, I almost feel like it's an interesting way that you describe that. I almost feel like the two things are virtually separate. Because as you said before, like the points are the overall game. There's still an active, live, vibrant game going on that doesn't currently have Wave 4 in it. So while releasing Wave 4 does make some of those changes, there are other specific changes that need to correct the meta that still need to happen, yeah, regardless of those ships entering the meta or not.
Yeah. So that's all the questions from the Facebook page, but we did get questions sent in through email and Facebook Ooh-hoo. Messenger as well. So people are like all over it this time. So we have Tim. He says, "Hi, Chris." Because apparently I'm the only one who answers some messages. I mean, it's not wrong, but...
He's not wrong.
Loving the podcast. Wanted to let you know that I appreciate all the hard work you guys do for our community. There's a question in here somewhere, I promise. In fact, here's a question. I'll be intrigued to hear your thoughts on, do you think FFG costs ships and upgrades in order to push certain aspects of the game, or they are actually trying to make it a fair and balanced competitive experience? And then he gives an example of, are you dropping Leia from 8 points to 2 points? Was this to prove that she is good and that you should play her even at more points? So you entice people in with a reduction, and then when she goes back up to 6, people realize that she's good, so we'll pay 6 now. But at 8, she wasn't going to see play because people weren't going to take that chance.
So. I see his argument. I see where he's going. I think that I'm trying not to insult our FFG overlords, whom I love with all my heart. Most of the guys we know personally. I don't think that they think that far ahead. and I don't mean that as an insult in any way, shape, or form. I think whenever they were developing the game, they tested it internally. They tested it with their much-loved playtesters. This is how it came out. And when things got released to the wild, that opens it up to a much larger grouping. And then they have to make adjustments based on there. So I think that Leia, when she was playtested at 8 points, seemed like the right thing. And then, wait a minute, this is a really good card that no one's playing it. I don't think that they... Because, I mean, she comes on what ship? Like they're not trying to boost sales. Initially, that's where I thought the question was going. Do you think they point things to for sales? The answer is no. I don't think they do that. But I don't see how artificially manipulate... I don't see them benefiting in any way, shape, or form from artificially manipulating a meta if it didn't equal sales.
So I think my take on this is almost twofold. Balancing the points is obviously handled by the devs. The ships that are in hyperspace handled by OP. So I feel like there's two different things there that don't necessarily pull in the same direction all of the time. And that, I mean, I may be out of line here that might not be how it's worked, but that's how the impression has come across from the different communications that they put out. That the organization of the events is all done by the OP side, so they are the ones who pick what ships go into hyperspace. That, I think, is done to make a specific environment that they wanted it to. Like, so the Star Viper got added in, on these ships got added in, like the Interceptor, the Bomber.
TIE Interceptor being one of the big ones, the Glaring.
They got added in to make a more specific environment, to make X-Wing games look how they wanted it to look. But that doesn't factor into a point side of it, which is what this question actually addresses. And I honestly think that they are trying to make it a fair and competitively balanced game.
I completely agree with that.
But again, the way the error correction works, so I'm going to talk about it from the system I used to work on the aircraft was called CSAS, which was Command Stability Augmentation System, and SPILS, which was Spin Intervention and Prevention, something like that. So basically, these two systems both have like computers and flying controls, and it takes all the Peter static inputs in for all of the turbulence that you experience, and then makes the plane fly in such a way that it flies smooth even though it's wobbling. So it wobbles the opposite way in which it thinks it's going to wobble through the turbulence, so you actually fly in a straight line.
Yep.
That works through a feedback loop in error correction. So if you think of a sinusoidal wave and you have a graph, you have a peak, which we're going to take layer, for example. Layer's peak is 8 points. So if she goes down to 2, that might be the trough, that she's undercosted at 2, overcosted at 8. My disappointment would come if layer goes back to 8 points. That should never happen within an error correction system.
Right.
Because you shouldn't have changed it in the first place. So she shouldn't go to 8. She might go to 7. And then she might drop to 3. And then 6. And then 4. And then, you know, finish at 5. That's how it should work. The problem you have and how X-Wing simulates the like turbulence being added is the release of a new wave is the turbulence you add into this feedback loop. So as you add in a new wave, if Leia suddenly has a cheaper option than the U-Wing, like if Rebels got access to a 25-point crew carrier, like the Phantom II, so maybe Leia was 8 points because everyone was running Leia on the Phantom in playtesting, and that's a really cheap package to deliver Leia to a table. But then when she went down to 2, suddenly you could fit her in with a U-Wing. So that U-Wing outputs more damage than the Phantom and is a viable ship to take on the table. So you've got all of these different factors that come in. So all of that might add up to her having to go to 9 points. If everything else in the faction changes, Leia might be good value at 9 points, where she wasn't good value at 8 before. If that makes any sense at all.
No, it makes perfect sense to me. I totally understand where you're going. Ideally, you want that wave factor to go out to a flat line, and that's where you know you've got the points just right. That's one of the beautiful things about second edition is they have that wiggle room to auto-correct and adjust, but in smaller and smaller increments to the point that everything's flying level.
So I think the keys to this is obviously that were there no other waves ever released, I feel like this points change X-Wing would be almost perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But we've had 4 waves before this points change. We've had 1, and then we've had other waves released since then. And then we're going to have more waves all the time. So all of that's going to factor in. And as Ed was saying, stuff needs to hit the wild to get perfectly tested and everything like that. So I feel like X-Wing will only get better balanced over time, in my opinion. But it doesn't mean it will be perfectly balanced this time.
Right. There will always be something in the meta now that you feel is either overcosted or undercosted. But the vast majority of the game, over the longer lifespan, will get closer and closer to whatever that perfect point range is.
Yeah. And I don't know that there's much more to say on that, really. I feel like people get really uppity on what the best thing is. And even, you're never going to have a perfectly balanced thing. So even when we talked about the Mining Guild TIE and the Z95, we're talking about a difference in like 0.5% or whatever. But I think when I think the Mining Guild TIE is better, it's a wash. They're both exactly the same. And are both worth 24 points. I just think that there's 0.5% more in favor of a Mining Guild TIE if you play to its advantages. If you don't play to its advantages, it's probably worse. So overall, it's probably the same. You know what I mean?
No, I agree completely.
Once you get to that level, there will still be a better option than something else. And that's okay. Oh, I know.
Yeah, no, fair answer.
Okay, we've got 2 more and then I can let you go. So we have a question from Bruno La Vigiera. I think that's right, Bruno. Sorry if I've butchered your surname there. He is the host of Millennium Condor. He does the Lore Master quiz for X-Wing and is based out of Montreal. Hey, Chris, a question for your next show. Any tips on how to set up a kill box without being too obvious? And then a follow-up part of the question. Also, when are you coming east to Montreal so I can give you back some of the hospitality you've shown when he was here with his wife?
Aww.
Maybe in next year, once Evie's a little bit older, Bruno, we'll try and come out. So we do want to go out and see Montreal and Quebec, but it's hard. He wanted me to come
Quebec's
and play.
Beautiful. Yeah. Love Quebec.
We'll try. So kill boxes. I'll do mine first. I'll let you talk on the other one. So I think if you're trying to set up a kill box for, it depends more about what your opponent's flying. So if they're flying aces and you're trying to trap a specific ace, I think you are going to telegraph that. So I think you have to look at setting up kill boxes in a position that something is likely to be in, rather than committing to a specific ship. If that kind of
works. Trying to force them into a particular corner.
Yeah. I think if you watch some of mine and Ed's games, we talk about it as we're playing, and like we can maybe do an in focus video on kill boxes and stuff.
Yeah, just watch Chris put me into a kill box every time we play.
I think one of the keys, especially with the kind of lists I've been playing where it's the pole and three A wing list, is that having ships that can position in such a way, and obviously the rear arcs on the A-wings make them a lot more unpredictable on where you're going to have those arcs. So a ship that looks like it's going to turn out is still turning out, but is also participating in the kill box. So there's that kind of stuff. But I think it definitely needs more video answer.
Yeah, I think that's a difficult question to answer in an audio format. The only thing that I can think on adding into that is move small. Because it does give you a wider range for setting up a much bigger kill box. Now, granted, you're hitting at range 2 to 3 as opposed to 1 and 2. I mean, ideally, the ideal kill box is everything at range 1, and you're throwing your maximum amount of dice at the same time. However, moving small allows you to only move those arcs 45 degrees, but you're also covering a much wider area of the playing field to be able to hit the ship that you're trying to tag down. You can kite ships into going in direction. Like there's a high priority target that you can pull through. And as you're pulling it through, everything else is kind of slightly turning down to catch that area in. So you have someone that's trying to pull them through. The other is the push and pushing them into a corner where they can't get out of it.
There's also telling your opponent you don't believe them. So if you watch the game against Ed, when I was running my pole and 3A wings against his Han and Jake list, Ed put Jake in a position where I was like, he could dial a way out of this, but I don't think he's going to. I think he's going to assume that I'm not going to commit hard. So I'm just going to say I don't believe him. Go four forwards with everyone. And then if Jake gets past me, it's not a big deal. But if he doesn't, it's in a kill box. So just tell your opponent you don't believe them and it's fine.
Yep. And that's exactly what happened. I was trying to fly Jake on the outside. I figured I'd blow past him and get behind him. And it took one turn. That was it. One turn of being in range, and that was it. Jake was gone.
Yeah. And then we do have a final email. This one came through email, obviously. That's why I said that. And this one's from Peter again. He says, hey, dude, having another great episode this week. So we sent this after last week's show.
Aw, thank you.
While you were talking to Ed about choice of a faction to run for the next 6 weeks, it reminded him of an old UK podcast for X-Wing 1.0 that's not around anymore. They did something similar in that I thought you might find interesting. Once a month, they would build a list on Earth for each host to use, and then for each host using ships that are unused, and then they would fly as much as they could and give a report on the ship / list and how it needed fixing the next month. So
that's not a bad idea.
So I think we actually spoke about doing something like this on the early episodes when we're all going to try and hit Basel.
I think we should still revisit that idea, by the way.
Yeah. It's waiting for Chad and Sean to be healthy. I think we can still do it and play our games, but when we did those Whistler lists and stuff, I actually ran a couple of them and stuff like that. So yeah, I think there's definitely a thing of, especially doing something with a specific list, like picking, put a poll up on the Facebook group, get people to pick a specific ship they'd like to see us build a list around, or going away, building our own list, talking about them on air, and then playing them, not even necessarily against each other, but like each one of us trying to get games in with that list against a variety of different things and see how it feels.
Yeah, no, I'm on board with that. I think that's a good idea. I think once we get our full cast back up and healthy and back on the air, I think I would like to still revisit the steel cage challenge of all of us playing against each other on Vassal to see how we do. Like, everyone plays everyone at least once and see what the final records are. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, and that's all of our questions.
Woohoo! So. And I can look down and say, hey, Chris, don't we have some housekeeping we got to do before we close out the show?
Yeah, we've got time. I can fit this in. Thanks for listening, everyone. Again, thanks for all of your support. We do really appreciate it. You can check us out on our Patreon, which is Lack of Focus on Patreon. As we said earlier in the episode, all of the proceeds from this episode are going to be going on to a charity, the winner of our points change competition guesses. So if you'd like to get involved with that.
I'm 1-0 so far,
Chris. You are undefeated in the points change guessing. So if you want to be involved in that, feel free to shoot me. If you miss it, because obviously it's so close, and want to donate, shoot me a message when you sign up for Patreon saying, look, I'd like this to go to a charity, and I'll make sure it's all accounted for, seeing as it's such a small window. And yeah, that's awesome. We do appreciate all the support. We've been creeping up and getting bigger and bigger for the Patreon, so that's been nice, I think. We're at the point now where it actually pays for the extra hosting we set up just for it. I did set up as extra housekeeping. The Dice Hate website is back up and running.
Yeah, you put some work into that.
Yeah, so that's gonna be extra expenses. I think that's $300 a year for that site. But we're gonna try and make sure we get some use out of it. I'm gonna force Ed to. Make some content for...
I volunteered.
Maybe do some Magic the Gathering content on there, but it's not just X-Wing. I've got Travis's Beatdown article. I'm going to be reaching out to people, and all these articles that keep popping up as Google documents, I'm going to see if they're happy for me to actually host them on a proper professional-looking, in theory, hopefully, Touchwood website, and go from there. And hopefully I'll be creating more content myself for it. I'm going to revisit my old Swarm Tactics articles and rewrite those for second edition. They were really popular when they were on Bell of Lost Souls in first edition. So make sure you check out that website, and any feedback I would really appreciate from you guys on that. You can find us on Facebook, which is Lack of Focus Podcast on Facebook. And we have an email address, which is lackoffocuspodcast@gmail.com. And you can shoot us messages on Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter for Dice Hate Chris. You can follow me on Instagram at Dice Hate Chris and message me on there, and it'll all be fine. And you can watch Ed's YouTube channel so I can stop talking for a minute as he takes over.
Yeah, if you are interested, if you are any remotely closely interested in Magic the Gathering Arena at all, I of course have my own YouTube channel that is Old Guy Gaming, and that you can find that on YouTube. I'm actually, if you go to Old Guy Gaming, and I am the first one. I don't know how I pulled it off, but there are a few other Old Guy Gamings out there on YouTube. I am the number one returned result. I am so proud of that. So yeah, I usually do about 3 videos a week. I'm in the middle of doing my beginner series for people that have never touched Arena before. So if you are so inclined and interested, go ahead and give that a check out. I'd appreciate it. I'm almost up to 400 subscribers. Almost up to 400 subs.
You're going to overtake me soon.
Well, what was interesting to me, and I was talking to this in a conversation with my son, like, I started the channel in September. It took from September until May to get to 300 subscribers. By the end of June, I'm going to have 400 subscribers. So to have that jump, to have that, you know, 25% jump in such a short period of time is huge to me. I don't know how I did it,
you'll be
thanks,
at a
guys.
Thousand in no time. You'll be at a that thousand is my goal. In no time. And then we'll be the Lack of Focus will be the afterthought. And it'll all be Old Guy Gaming, and we'll
oh come
sad.
On at that point I'm making what 8 cents a day, and this is still going to be my primary focus.
Yeah, okay, I think that's everything. I probably missed something and I apologize, but hey ho.
Excellent. All right, guys, I want to thank you again, as always, for joining us. I think for the next foreseeable future, we do have a couple of fallen comrades who are kind of on the heel. So it might just be Chris and I for the next couple of episodes. So if you have things that you want to talk about, we would love additional help and content. If you have a list you want to review, anything along those lines, we always like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love talking to Chris. I can talk to Chris all day long, but obviously with just the two of us, it kind of shortens up the episodes a bit because there's only two bantering ideas back and forth.
Still hitting 2 hours. It's not exactly shorter.
Holy crap, I didn't even notice that. Okay, so yeah, I do have a hard stop on this one, so I do appreciate it, guys. We shall see you next episode, and as always, guys, fly casual. Thank you once again for joining the Lack of Focus X-Wing podcast. Check out Dice Hate Productions for all of the latest episodes, and we'll be looking forward to seeing you again next episode.